So, here I am on the bottom of the ocean in a city run by a madman looking for honeybee saliva. If I told someone a month ago on the surface what I'd be doing right now, he'd probably ask how to score what I'm currently smoking. I got to the apiary just in time to see the downsides of working with stinging insects. Seems that honeybees trapped in a confined, pressurized environment tend to get territorial and hostile, as evidenced by the sight of one of Ryan Splicer's getting stung to death by a small swarm of the bugs. I hightailed it back several steps, waiting for the yelling to die down. As I did, it occurred to me that I had no idea whatsoever how to collect honeybee saliva. Time to get a doctor's opinion. Langford, you out there?
Well, until I get those supplies, my social calendar is rather clear.
Good. Mind telling me what I have to do to get honeybee spit? I missed that the day they covered that in engineering class.
Oh, all right. The hives are set up to extract the saliva while they are being made or repaired. You'll find the collectors at the bottom of the hives, refined. Get all you can from them. There should be enough to make the vector.
How will I know when I'm done?
When you've checked all the hives. There's only 26 of them. Just open the panel marked Specimen Collection and remove the containers. The original caretakers are likely beyond caring whether you replace the containers or not, so just get them and go.
Why collect spit at all?
Research. Experiments were carried out to increase the yield of honey, make pollination more efficient, and make it easier to breed queens through royal jelly. Now enough questions. Air isn't getting any fresher.
I got one more.
It had better be important.
How do I collect the stuff without getting stung to death?
I can see how that would be useful. The apiary's smoke dispersal system should still be operational. Activate the lever outside the main section, and it'll disperse a smoke that will make the bees lethargic. Then you can go in and collect the substance without getting stung.
For how long?
Oh, 30 seconds?
That long?
If you hurry, you should only need to use it 7 or 8 times.
Be right back, Doc. I put the radio away inside. It doesn't get any easier, does it? By the time I got back to the apiary, the splicer was dead and the bees had moved on. I got closer and, out of habit, checked the body for useful items. A few bullets, an Eve hypo, and a container of chlorophyll. Well, at least he was good for something. I entered the apiary and couldn't help but admire the setup. A front counter for goods, and behind it a large section with about 30 beehives, with vents all over the upper walls, clearly to allow free passage to all of Arcadia for the bees. And smack dab in the middle of the outer chamber, a switch to set off the smokers to pacify the bees. Ah, yes, the bees. They were swarming all around the middle of the inner chamber. I could see them through the reinforced windows. Ryan's gas attack must have riled him up something fierce, which meant that if I was caught in there when the smoke wore off, I was going to go out a pincushion. I suddenly wondered if I was allergic to bee stings, never been stung before. Well, now would be a really bad time to find out. I hit the lever and a surprisingly loud chime went off. The bees began to waver, then returned to their hives. I took off towards the hives as soon as I dared, counting off the seconds as I found the small petri dishes and closed them, then put them into my bag. And that's when I saw the splicers start to show up. I cursed myself for an idiot. That chime probably could have been heard in every vent throughout Arcadia. I just rang the damn dinner bell. The ticking sound of the clock was winding down, and I ran for the safety of the outer chamber just in time. The crazed screaming of the splicers attracted the bees, and they charged out to defend their hives, attacking the splicers with a vengeance. I ran to a corner and hauled out the shotgun, ready to fire at anyone who came to the apiary or tried to leave it. I got lucky. That group of splicers was too busy getting stung to worry about me, and it wasn't long before the last of them had fallen. That left me with a problem. I wasn't done here, not by half. And every time I put the bees to sleep, the chime would wake up the neighbors, and it'd be sudden death rodeo all over again. There has to be a way out. Wait. How did the people that worked here avoid getting stung? I looked around carefully, then smiled as I found what I was looking for in a storage crate. Bingo. I turned to the hives. Now we're smoking. It worked like a dream. I shuffled my way through the apiary, suppressing the urge to whistle as I collected the petri dishes, putting them into my pack. The bees buzzed angrily around me, but thanks to finding one of the beekeeper's outfits, all they could do was buzz. A few splicers came by, checking to see if there's anything left to me. All I had to do was move to the far end of the chamber. As soon as they saw me in the outfit, they barreled straight in and were instantly attacked by the swarm, dropping them before they could get in close. Enjoy it while it lasts, buddy. You've got to leave the bees sometime. I searched the last of the hives, then walked out of the apiary, brushing the bees off as I did. Next thing to pick up on the shopping list? Distilled water. I'd found an audiovox earlier about some wine critic complaining about wine being watered down at Worley's Winery, even if the water was distilled, not taken directly from the ocean. Sounds like the best place in Rapture to wet the old whistle. I retract my previous statement. As soon as I got to the area, I found two turrets and a security camera covering the area. That'll teach me to walk into someplace in Rapture I ain't been before and expect a friendly welcome. It took a little doing, but I managed to persuade the hostile machinery to see me as friend instead of foe. I've quickly found the reason for the security. They were covering a safe. After hacking the nearby health station, I set about my task, picking up bottles of distilled water where I could find them. I also found a big daddy walking the halls, following a little sister. Okay, I need to do this smart. I hacked the safe, found some money and ammunition, put the bottles of precious water into the safe to protect it, and so it wouldn't weigh me down for what I was about to do next. Waited for it to get close, and four splicers rush in, either seeing an easy target or were desperate enough to take on one of these monsters. Well, that put them within sight of the security camera, who immediately called the local fuzz, started shooting at the splicers. Next thing you know, a few stray shots from the bots hit the big daddy. It starts attacking the bots and the splicers, which brought the turrets into the fight. I just hunkered down behind the counter and waiting for the floor to stop bouncing. The shooting finally stopped, and I got up to admire the spectacle of it all. Two splicers tried to use the health station, got faces full of poison gas. Four security bots are what was left of them. The big daddy sitting on the floor lights out the bodies of the other two splicers next to it. The little sister crying next to the big daddy. I rushed over to her, using the plasmid Tenenbaum gave me to exorcise the slug from her, and personally carried her to a vent. Never a time when that wasn't worth it. God, was I starting to get used to this? No, of course not. Experience with dealing with this big daddy and the splicers, that was all it was. Honest. I ran back to the farmer's market. I had almost everything I needed to fix the trees and everything else in Arcadia. When I got back, I saw that there had been some visitors to the market in my absence. Quite a few of them, and they all had walked into the wrong room. Between the hacked cameras, the machine gun turrets, and the rocket turret down the hall, the place looked like a well-dressed war zone. I counted 11 bodies, including another big daddy. Sure enough, there's a little sister hiding behind the counter. Easy there, kid. I'm one of the good guys, I whispered, but she was as determined as the others to get away now that the big daddy was down. She kicked up more of a fight, though, and I had to fight her a little bit to keep her still long enough to use the plasmid on her. But she got rid of the slug. need a little help. That slug was a big monster. As she coughed up the rest of the atom, I looked down at her. Blonde hair, cute as a button. Especially now that her skin was becoming the right color and her eyes weren't glowing that dull yellow anymore. I wiped her lips with a clean handkerchief and smiled. If you need to rest, rest. I'll make sure nobody bothers you, kid. She looked up at me with those big, wide blue eyes and then just curled up into my side. Jeez. God only knows what this kid's been through. I put an arm around her to help keep her from the cold and looked down at her. My name's Mark. She looked up at me with those big eyes.
I'm Sally.
I smiled in a way I hoped was reassuring. I'm very happy to meet you, Sally. Listen, will you be safe if you go to the vent? She nodded. All right, when you're ready, we'll go.
Can I stay with you?
God, that voice. It was heartbreaking just to hear it. Sally, I'm going to be going places that aren't safe. I'm trying to help the other little girls and cure them. But if I take you with me, you'll get hurt, and I can't let that happen.
Will you come back for me?
I had no idea what to say to her. I didn't know if I'd be alive an hour from now. I had no business making promises I had no way to keep. I opened my mouth to let her know that I'd try, and instead the words, "I promise I'll come back for you," came tumbling out instead. She smiled and kissed my cheek, and for one idealistic moment, I wanted to come back for her more than anything. I helped her up into the vent, watched her crawl away. Congratulations, stupid. You just made a promise to a little girl that you'd come back for her. A promise you've got a snowball's chance in hell of keeping. There's a special place in hell for guys who break promises to little girls, you know that, right? I stood up. And I guess there's only one thing to do about it. And what's that? Came the accusing voice. I set my teeth. Keep it. I said aloud, then headed back to Langford. Right now, I didn't care how many people were in my way. I was going to save these people or die trying. Okay, no dying trying. Much better. Langford, get that lab warmed up. I'm coming back with the goods. I just need more of that chlorophyll stuff. Any ideas?
The only ones who I know for sure that could provide it are the Saturnine.
I heard about them. Aging frat boys drinking plasmids and calling it ambrosia.
I should really be more careful about where I leave my audio notes.
Don't be too hard on yourself. A lot of people have been leaving those things around. Lucky for me, it's helping me get a better understanding of this place. It's how I got more clues that Atlas really was Frank Fontaine.
Wait, what? What?
Tell you all about it when I get a little bit more photosynthetic. Ciao, I said, smiling as I took some small satisfaction that the tables were turned, that I knew something she didn't. Thus armed, I headed for the caves where the Saturnine were known to hang out. Just follow the men made of sticks and vines. As I headed there, I came to the rolling hills and found a big daddy. And better yet, the last little sister in Arcadia was walking alongside him. I was low on ammo by this point, but I had an idea. I took all the proximity mines I'd hoarded up, placed them a stone's throw from the rocket turret nearby, waited until I was as far away from the turret as possible, and then fired off a shot from the pistol with an armor-piercing bullet. That got his attention, and he came for me. The rocket turret was already throwing rockets his way, which caught his attention as the more serious threat. And he barreled towards it, right into the mines they'd laid out. And that laid him out proper, damaging him to the point to where the now stunned Big Daddy was a sitting duck for the rockets. When it was all over, I cured the little sister and sent her on her way. As I did, I hoped Sally was okay. I hoped Elizabeth was okay. I hoped Langford was okay. And I really hoped I was going to be okay. After all I'd been through, the Saturnine were easy, comparatively. Houdini splicers, every one. And while they thought they were being sneaky, I was onto their game by now, and what they thought made them special made them predictable. I loaded up on explosive buckshot and waited for them to vanish, then hit them as they were reappearing. They didn't even have a chance to return fire. Literally. Searching them got me the rest of the chlorophyll solution. Things were starting to look up. I hot-footed over to Langford, showing a few more dead splicers. I checked them over. Hey, waste not, want not. More ammo, more med packs, a few more spare parts that could be used in the U-Invent. Every little bit helps. I made it up to Langford's office and found her in her lab, with the vents in the room not only shut, but sealed. She was looking more cheerful, and was she wearing makeup? Okay, not important. Got everything, Doc, I said as I laid out the ingredients she needed. Let's get this garden growing again. Langford looked the ingredients over.
I have to admit it, Mark, I am impressed. I've been listening in on the radio, and you're clearly surviving despite everything thrown at you.
Yeah, well, I got something you really need to listen to. I pulled out an audio vox I'd found while searching the farmer's market, one from Andrew Ryan marked Desperate Times. I think this might explain a few things. I hit play.
Dr. Suchong, frankly, I'm shocked by your proposal. If we were to modify the structure of our commercial plasmid line as you propose, to have them make the user vulnerable to mental suggestion through pheromones, would we not be able to effectively control the actions of the citizens of Rapture? Free will is the cornerstone of this city. The thought of sacrificing it is abhorrent. However, we are indeed in a time of war. If Atlas and his bandits have their way, will they not turn us into slaves? And what will become of free will then? Desperate times call for desperate measures.
Dr. Langford stared at the device as if it was covered with small lizards.
That hypocrite! The utter gall of the man! Preaching over and over about his beliefs? Taking control of Fontaine Futuristics wasn't enough? He's betrayed everything he stood for!
Her hands clenched into fists, and then she looked into my eyes. Wow, Julie was scary when she was cheesed off. She didn't say another word, pouring the ingredients into the U-Invent, and after listening to some clanking, out came a bottle filled with a milky green fluid within it.
Listen to me, Mark. As soon as this starts to work, Ryan is going to send every splicer he's got left in Arcadia straight here. Even with the turrets and other defenses, this lab isn't made to hold off that many splicers.
I heard what she was saying, and unfortunately, I knew exactly what would help. One of Tenenbaum's gifts included a new type of plasmid, one that would enable me to get any Big Daddy to think of me as a little sister, and defend me just as vigorously. There were no more little sisters in here, but there were a few Big Daddies left, stuck on their eternal rounds even without their charges. The problem was injecting myself with it yet even more of Rapture's witch's brew. What bothered me more was that the idea itself bothered me even less. Part of me wanted to see what I could do with it, and I was seeing the potential of how it could be used later to rescue other little sisters. What better weapon to take down a Big Daddy than another Big Daddy? Dr. Langford must have seen the look on my face.
There's something on your mind.
I can get us the reinforcements, but it involves doing something I don't want to do and yet want to do, even though I shouldn't.
Splicing.
Dr. Langford nodded, sitting down at one of her lab stations.
Listen to me. Either way you play it, if we don't get help, both of us are going to be dead before the Lazarus vector can be dispersed. They'll be able to shut it down, and without another source of oxygen, a lot of people are going to die. Ryan won't care, you've heard him. He'd rather destroy Rapture before he'd allow it to slip from his control.
Can he do that? Destroy the whole city?
He could, and I think you know he would.
I couldn't believe it. And there's nothing we can do to stop it. Dr. Langford looked up at me.
I didn't say that. I just don't know how. Yet. But first things first, I'm not going to try to convince you that the ends justify the means. Ryan based his entire idea about how to run Rapture on that principle, and you can see the results. But I can't see another way around it.
Give me a chance to think about it, see if I can come up with another idea.
Oh, very well. I owe you that much, considering what you've done. But don't take too much time to think. Time is not a luxury we currently possess.
Right. I walked back to the grotto, back to where I first found the rose that started the scavenger hunt. I went through the bodies I'd put aside before, merely a reflex now, thinking about how few options I had, and sat down. I pulled out the service radio, that which had become my lifeline for my soul. I turned the frequency to Elizabeth's. Turkey to Songbird, turkey to Songbird, are you out there? Over. The reply took too long in coming for my tastes.
Hello.
She said, sounding slurred. Elizabeth, are you all right?
Mark, is that you?
She sounded a bit off. Yeah, it's me. Are you okay?
I need my medicine. Give me a second.
Okay, take your time. I'm not going anywhere. I sat there, pulling my feet out of the water. Being damp on a regular basis didn't bother me as much as it used to. 12 minutes went by before I heard her voice again.
I'm here, Mark.
She sounded like her old self again, thank goodness.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I really need to talk to you again.
You know, a girl could get used to this kind of attention.
She added saucily. Huh? Are you okay? You sound different.
Sorry, it's just I've been on my own for months. No one to talk to for long periods. My social skills may be suffering. And the pharmacy here is running low on the medicine I need.
Is there anything I can do to help?
Well, there's one place that has more of what I need, but to get what I need, it's going to take Adam to get it.
I can help you with that. In fact, it kind of touches on what I wanted to talk to you about. I've got the chance to help get the trees and plants here living again, but to do that, I'm going to need some help. I can get it, but to do that, I have to splice up some more. She was silent for a while. I kept talking, not entirely sure why. Look, Elizabeth, you're the only person I know here that really cares about me, and I really wish I could be there to help you not be so alone. But to do that, I'm going to have to do things I'm not proud of myself for doing.
I know exactly how you feel.
You do?
We've all got our sins, our debts to pay, and some we'll never be able to settle. But if what you're doing helps others, then you do what you have to do.
I nodded. Thanks. I'm not going to be okay with what I've got to do, but you help me feel better about it, at least. Look, we can help each other out. I've got almost all the Adam I've ever collected from the little sisters I've saved and the big daddies I've had to take out.
You do?
She sounded eager. Yeah, but I don't need it, and you do. So I'm going to pneumo it to you, and you can use it to get your medicine.
I hope you got a lot. What I need is going to require a lot of Adam.
I've got just over 1,000 units.
That is a lot.
Will it be enough?
It'll be plenty.
She sounded happy, which made me feel even better. I'll send it on in a few minutes. I took a deep breath. I was tired, but hearing Elizabeth's voice helped me get moving. Thanks. I just hope I don't end up splicing up so much that you won't want to look at me when I get over there.
Get over here?
I made a promise. You, me, Paris, remember?
Mark, just... it's all right if you don't keep your promise.
Elizabeth, what are you talking about?
Mark, listen. I'm not Rapunzel in the tower waiting to let down my hair. You've got this idea in your head that you'll rush over here like some knight in shining armor to rescue the damsel fair. but it's not going to turn out the way you think. I'm not fair. In fact, you'd be repulsed by what you see looking at me now. And I'm no maiden in distress. I've done things I can never atone for, never take back, never repay. I'm not who or what you think I am.
That medicine you need. It's Adam, isn't it?
Yes.
When Fontaine hurt you, it took more than a med pack to heal you, didn't it? You had to use Adam directly. But Adam's scarce. How'd you survive this long?
Before Atlas returned to Rapture, he had big daddies and little sisters collecting here in the department store. Not many, but enough to stockpile Adam. When he and his splicers made their assault on Rapture, they took almost all of their stockpile with them. But one of their caches was left behind when a counterattack by Ryan's forces took out a group of Atlas's men here in the store. The forces were defeated, the camp looted, but Ryan's men missed the cache of Adam.
But how'd you survive long enough to find it?
One of the little sisters helped me. I tried to help her, save her, but I failed twice. She gave me the Adam she had. I used it to heal myself and came across the rest of the Adam while scavenging. Oh, Sally.
Wait a minute. Sally?
Yes, that was... What is it?
I just met a little sister and saved her an hour ago over in Arcadia. Got the slug out of her and made her a little girl again. She said her name was Sally.
Blonde hair? Blue eyes?
Yeah.
It must be her. I don't believe it. Where is she now?
She's probably with the other girls I saved, wherever that is.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God, Mark. You have no idea what you've done for me.
Elizabeth, listen to me. I'm going to send you the Adam, but I need you to do something for me.
Anything.
Stay alive. That's the favor. I did you a solid. Now you do me a solid.
All right, Mark. But you better be careful what you wish for.
Done. I got up and headed for Gatherer's Garden. Time to call in the heavies. The look on Langford's face was priceless as I walked in with a big daddy on my heels, following me like a newly bought puppy. Think this guy might even the odds?
Can you control it?
Completely. I don't know for how long, but there's another one patrolling the area outside. Push comes to shove, and this guy isn't enough, I could call in the other one. I went to my stash and handed her a box of anti-personnel machine gun ammo. Every round of this type I have, load these so that they'll be fired first from the turrets. Can you do that?
Of course.
Good. As soon as you're done, start processing the Lazarus vector and stay in the lab. Don't come out till it's done. Or the shooting stops, whichever comes last. I wish I felt as confident about this as I sounded. She nodded, then went to work. I looked up at the Big Daddy. Come on, Fido, let's get to work. I proceeded to lay traps and proximity mines on the doorways, staggering them just enough so they'd take out not only the splicers that came in first, but the ones who came in afterwards. Just had to make sure Fido stayed out of the way. I wasn't sure how our newfound friendship would last if it got hit by an attack it perceived as coming from me.
Mark!
Langford called from the lab intercom.
I'm ready to start processing the vector through the misting system. It has to mix thoroughly with the water reservoirs if it's going to be effective enough to cover all plant life in Arcadia and the farmers market.
How long is that going to take?
A few minutes. The reservoirs hold tens of thousands of gallons.
Start it now. God, I hope to hell I knew what I was doing. They came in just as Langford said, mere seconds after she started mixing the vector. One thing you can say about Ryan, he's predictable when it comes to taking something away from him that he thinks he owns. At first, I figured the doors would keep them out. Then I remembered the tools made to build Rapture hadn't evaporated when the city was built. I saw the telltale lights of them using acetylene torches to burn their way through the doors. I retreated as far back as I could, seeing the other doors being cut through as I made my way to the door leading up to the stairs to Langford's lab. The Big Daddy followed obediently, and I held up a hand. "Stay, boy." It didn't react, but it stayed put, even as I heard one of the doors give way and the yelling, however brief, as they moved in and found the little Christmas presents I'd left for them. And unlike regular presents, these gifts unwrapped them. The boom startled the others, but it didn't scare them off, and another door came down. More splicers coming in and setting off the mines there, too. From that point on, things got very loud. Splicers came in from all sides, and my back was to the gate to the lab. The turrets placed around the lab was making short work of the splicers, but with each wave they suffered more and more damage, and I had no time to make repairs. Soon the turrets would be horde of combat, and that meant I would end up as the main course. Well, before that happens, I'll send them something tough to chew on. I pulled out the machine gun. A short burst at an enemy should be enough to let the Big Daddy know who to stomp on. I just have to make sure I don't get killed while he's off playing ping-pong with Splicer's internal organs. 3 waves down. The turret in the outside offices is down. The others are starting to smoke and the bodies are piling up. The Splicers from wave number 4 are ganging up on the Big Daddy like hyenas trying to take down an elephant. And the hyenas are giving the elephant a serious run for his money. Nothing for it. I've got to make a break for it, find the other Big Daddy and get his attention. But there's too many of them. Every time I make a break for it, I get forced back, and it's costing me medical packs and ammo. This is insane. The only chance I got is to head to the other side of the room. It's flooded, but there's some furniture there I can stand on, and I can use the electrobolt to make it into the deadliest wading pool on Earth. If I can get there without getting dead. That's beginning to be a recurring theme with my plans lately. I saw the number of hyenas drop to 3, and things were starting to look up, until I heard more yelling. For the love of Mike, is every damn splicer in Arcadia coming to kill us? How many of them are even left? I moved back against a corner, preparing to make a break for it, when the Big Daddy gave a long groan and keeled over. His problems were finally over. And mine were just beginning. I saw the splicers turning slowly towards me, bloodied and broken and honked off at me, and more were on the way. God, if you're planning a miracle sometime in my immediate future, now would be a good time. They moved towards me slowly, clearly savoring the kill to come. I had shotgun rounds, but I'd be overwhelmed. And then I saw what came through the door to the left. Apparently, the mountain decided to come to Muhammad. A Big Daddy lumbered in. The Palooka must have had this place on his patrol route, and Mr. the Ugly Bastard never looked so good. I threw the disgusting green glob at the thing and watched as the lights went from yellow to green. I turned back to look at the splicers. They had the same look on their faces that said, "We are so screwed." Far be it for me to disappoint them, and I spit at one of them, hitting him square in the face. As soon as I did, the Big Daddy's lights went from green to here comes the pain red. The huge drill came up and the hammer came down on him. I had to back up for a different reason now, to keep them from getting blood splattered on me. A bell sounded in my ears. I looked up as I heard a loud hissing sound. I made one last check for incoming splicers, but all I got was an eerie silence as I walked outside the lab and looked around. Winter was clearly over, as the green started flooding back into all the plants, the trees, and the grass. I could barely believe it. Langford brought everything back from the dead. I ran upstairs to find Langford sitting at a nearby desk, opening a bottle of liquor and pouring 2 glasses. Congrats, Doc, you did it. This whole place is coming back to life.
Don't be silly, boy. We did it.
She handed me a glass.
Without your help, I'd still be stuck in my lab waiting to run out of food.
I took the glass and emptied it in one smooth motion. You have no idea how much I needed this. I sat down and looked over at her. So what are you going to do now?
Keep the lockdown in place until you have to leave, lock it up tight afterwards, and then I'm going to get the Thinker to have the security bots clean the last of the splicers out of here, and secure power and heat. Thanks to you and Ryan's attempt to kill me, I just became an independent contractor.
You're not gonna start charging people.
Of course not.
She waved off the question.
I'm just not going to be beholden to Ryan, that lousy fink. I prefer to work for someone who doesn't think of murder as an option when moderating professional disputes.
I chuckled. Shucks, you could always work for me. I don't exactly have a company, or a staff, or anything, but you could do worse. I poured myself another drink, tossed it back, then realized Julie wasn't saying anything. I turned to her and she was smiling at me.
You've got yourself a deal.
Say what?
I said you've got yourself a deal, boss.
I looked at this glass. What was in this stuff? I thought you were planning to be self-employed.
I was, but a better offer came along. Face it, Mark, we need each other's help, and I've been thinking about what you're doing. Curing the little sisters and thumbing your nose at Ryan may be its own reward, but you need to do more. Not everyone in Rapture is spliced up. Most of the people that are left are hiding in their homes, scared out of their minds, scavenging to survive.
Wait, hold on. I'm just some slob who was in the wrong plane crash at the wrong time. I came here as Robinson Crusoe. At what point did I become George Washington? I closed my eyes and rubbed my temples. Look, I haven't slept right in I don't know how long. Feels like I've been running for a month. Can I at least sleep on it? Langford nodded.
There's a bed in one of the offices here. Get some sleep and we'll talk about it when you wake up.
Right. I can already feel my body fulfilling its promises, pain and exhaustion making a simple walk to a bedroom feel like a marathon. The adrenaline was wearing off fast. I put down my weapons and collapsed in the bed, clothes still on, asleep before my head hit the pillow. I opened my eyes. I was lying in bed, looking up at the ceiling. There was a chill in the room, and I realized I wasn't wearing any clothes. I looked up, and I saw Julie Langford standing over me. She looked younger somehow, still attractive. She removed her smock and dress, stand there with nothing on, and right now I wanted her more than anything. She climbed into bed and straddled me, and I closed my eyes, and we were one. But she didn't make any noise. I opened my eyes to look up at Langford, and it wasn't Langford, it was another woman. Elizabeth. Only there was something wrong. She moved her head down, and oh God, she was a splicer, and she was all mouth and teeth, and I heard that perfect voice begging me to kiss her. I woke up, cold sweat freezing on my skin. I think I screamed, but I wasn't sure. Okay. I think we can now add one more side effect to splicing. Weird nightmares. Weird, freaked out nightmares. I pulled myself up looking around. It was dark, only the lights from the outside visible. Neon signs, some fish that could generate their own light. And something else. Some sort of light coming from the far side of Rapture.
Mark?
The voice from behind me startled the hell out of me, and I spun around to see Langford there. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph! Don't sneak up on me like that!
Bad dreams, hmm? The scream was a dead giveaway.
Okay, that wasn't embarrassing at all. I'm sorry I snapped at you. How long was I out?
Almost 14 hours. How do you feel?
Better and worse. I groaned. Body aches, but I can cope. Any news?
I made contact with people outside Arcadia. Kept it hush-hush. You're starting to become a regular celebrity.
Geez, botanist and press agent. I shook my head. Coffee? She pointed to the main lab.
Over there. There's a few people wanting to meet you.
Yeah, and I bet Andrew Ryan's at the top of the list. I poured myself a cup of coffee and then grimaced at the taste. You know, Julie, for someone so good with plants, you have some really bad coffee beans.
Well, you could always not drink it.
Be serious. Bad coffee is loads better than no coffee. I took a sip. Not exactly Folgers, but what was? So, who else wants to sit down for a chinwag?
Sophia Lamb wants to speak with you. She says she's concerned about your mental welfare.
I blinked. What is she, a shrink?
Actually, yes. Ryan brought her down to Rapture to help people cope with life here.
I laughed derisively. Didn't help.
I think she also wants your help.
Of course.
Ryan made her disappear. Stuck her in Persephone.
Wait, what's Persephone?
It's a prison where Ryan sends people to keep them quiet and out of the way. The inmates there get used as guinea pigs for experiments. It's run by one of the founders of this fair city, Augustus Sinclair. Oh, by the way, he also wants to chat.
Oh, I'm sure he does. Whose side is he on?
The side he's always on. His own.
Great. Anyone else?
Yes.
Langford made a face.
Sander Cohen.
I've heard about him. Ryan put him in charge of Fort Frolic. Heard he, in the terms used by the Matterborn, went peculiar.
He's been peculiar long before he came to Rapture. But I think he's been splicing like it's Halloween candy. Also, I have reason to believe he's a little, shall we say, light in the loafers.
I stared at Langford. After all that I've had to deal with, I think we can put that little detail under the could not possibly give a damn column. Don't you think? Okay, I know I'm going to regret this, but what do they want? Langford looked at a piece of paper.
Dr. Lamb thinks her daughter has been made into a little sister. Her name's Eleanor. Black hair, blue eyes.
I'll keep an eye out. Next.
Sinclair wants to discuss a deal. If I know him, he wants to bring the secrets of a Rapture to the surface. Sinclair would sell mud if there was a buck to be made in it.
I'm surprised Ryan hasn't canonized him yet. And Cohen?
He's a bit more cryptic. He says, I can bring you to the songbird's cage, little moth, but in return, I need you to help me with my greatest masterpiece. The way to Fort Frolic is open to you. Artists.
The bathysphere here can get me to Fort Frolic?
Considering the amount of traffic between there and here, if it had been a regular road, there'd be ruts for the tires by now.
She looked at me.
You're going there?
I have to.
Listen, stay a little longer. You could get more rest, and you could stay.
For the first time, I saw a more vulnerable side to her. I had a feeling I knew what she wanted. Stay here where it's safe. We could spend some time together. Julie, I made a promise. Would you really want me to stay if I was the kind of guy who bailed on people that needed them? She looked at me for a long time, then closed her eyes and sighed.
You know, you think pretty highly of yourself, don't you? Here I was, trying to keep you from getting killed, and you have to go and get all noble on me.
Langford huffed, but I knew it was an act.
Well, fine. I'm still in your employ, so you're stuck with me. But you better come through, mister. I'm sick and tired of disappointment.
Works for me, Doc. I smiled as I packed up for the trip. Langford had looted and dumped the bodies.
They make good fertilizer.
So I had plenty of money, raw materials, and ammo to work with. A quick trip to the UN vent and the Circus of Values, and I was loaded for bear. I had a bad feeling it wasn't going to be enough.
To be continued in part 6.